This is OTB AM.
That's a load of nonsense. Because he's English, he's led Liverpool to a Champions League and he's led him to a Premiership title for the first time in 30 years. It's because he's English. That is outrageous to say that. Well, if you're looking for an headline, then there you go, that's it. It's all that nonsense.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 a.m. only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock, joined by the former Republic of Ireland defender Damien Delaney and the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonald, to talk about the beautiful game. Football and Off the Ball, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming live as well. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope and Twitter at Off the Ball, Facebook, YouTube, and on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it if you have not already. Good afternoon, lads. Hope you're well. Manchester City now 13 points clear at the top of the Premier League following a 2-1 win over West Ham. Ruben Diaz and John Stones with the goals. 20 wins in a row now for City in all competitions. 14 in the Premier League. And Damien Delaney, if your centre halves are getting both your goals today, just shows how great a run it has been for Manchester City.
Yeah, it's great, obviously, for Man City to win the game, but for the centre-halves to get a bit of recognition. You know, they've been doing fantastic work over the last number of months, contributed hugely to the run that they're on, because even though there's times in that run they haven't been their fluent best. Now, I mean, I know that is a stretch to criticise them, but, you know, periods in games where there's a lull and stuff, their centre-backs have been rock solid and have kept the thing moving, and today they got the rewards with gold. So it's fantastic to see, and that juggernaut just keeps on moving. And I think it's safe to say now that pretty much should be the Premier League wrapped up for them.
And a great win over Borussia Mönchengladbach during the week as well, as you would expect, Damien. Can they go all the way in Europe this year? Well, they can't be playing any better.
Yeah, look, I mean, they're certainly in the form to do it. Now, I know that when you get to the latter stages of the Champions League, say the semi-final, final, you know, you do need a certain amount of luck because you're playing against really, really, really good opposition who can match you and stifle you and have game plans to kind of knock you off your stride. So you might need a little bit of fortune, maybe a refereeing decision or, you know, just something. You know, I'm not saying that Manchester City would be lucky, but when the games are going to be as tight as what they're going to be at the latter end of the Champions League, they might need some little bit of help, really. But I think they can do it. You know, Bayern Munich are looking strong as well. And, you know, a Man City-Bayern Munich final would be the dream final, I suppose, to see. But, look, they're in a really good place at the minute. And I certainly expect to see them at the bare minimum in the semi-finals of the Champions League.
I know you watched the Liverpool game. You were doing commentary on it a few weeks ago. Damien, what has impressed you most about this incredible run that City have been on?
The focus the players have. You know, they have just been dialed in for the last 3 months. Every player is exactly where he's supposed to be on the pitch when he's supposed to be there. There doesn't look to be any real weakness. They're not carrying anyone. Everybody looks not just fit, but really, really hungry. And nobody looks tired. There's a spring in everyone's step, which is obviously fantastic. But then Pep's coaching, he's getting his tactics spot on, and they're pretty much suffocating teams. I mean, I read a stat during the week that I think it's 18 games now where they've never been behind in a game, which just shows you that from minute one, they're bang at it. They get their nose in front and then they just go on and win it. You know, when you contrast that to other teams that are, you know, falling behind and having to chase games and perform magic or miracles, this side just get their noses in front and just squeeze the life out of teams. And they're in a good place. And, you know, considering that maybe a month ago they were second in the league, to now be, what is it, 13 points clear, I think, is an incredible achievement in 1 month.
Yeah, champions elect pretty much, Damien. West Ham have done well. They've surprised a lot of people, Dan, this season. Declan Rice has been great. The two Czech lads, Sofal and Socek and Jesse Lingard, a good addition, but not enough today.
Yeah, you sort of know what you're going to get in a West Ham game, really. Like, they're going to hang in there. They're going to get bodies around their own penalty area where possible. And, you know, I've seen a few of their games recently, and, you know, the Spurs game, and I know they were hanging on a bit in the end, but they're definitely, like, they're squeezing as much as they can out of what they have there. I mean, Rice, as you mentioned, he's superb. You'd be very surprised to see him staying there that much longer. I'm sure he'll say he doesn't want to go anywhere else, and then we'll go somewhere else. But I think, you know, it's sort of like, and there's always that question mark about where they go next. But in some respects, there's something about enjoying the now for them as much as they can. I mean, Moyes has sort of restored his reputation a bit when you consider where it was, you know, at Sunderland. They've played a lot of the so-called better sides recently, and like they've been very competitive and they've taken points. And I mean, like we talk about Man City being as they are, like as everything Damo said, like, you know, they don't go behind, you know, they see games out. Yet ironically enough, like 93rd minute, you know, West Ham, like I'd got a couple of late chances to get the ball into the box. And I think it was Diop had that late chance at the end. And they were inches away from getting a point. And then we're having a completely different discussion here today about, well, you know, resilient West Ham, you know, smash and grab or whatever you want to, whatever phrase you want to use it. So you wouldn't say the City are miles clear at the top for a reason. They're by far the strongest side. But I suppose they got away with one a small bit there, you know, and that they actually did give themselves a chance to concede. And West Ham, like, they nearly took it. But we'll see where they finish. Like, you keep expecting them to just drop off, but I mean, some of the better sides around them are so inconsistent. But Liverpool obviously been one that springs to mind pretty obviously. But you don't know, like, they could still end up sort of having a reasonably high finish. I don't know what to, like, you know, fifth, sixth would be an amazing season for them, really.
Yeah, he's restored his reputation, hasn't he, as Daniel said there, David Moyes. It's good from a human perspective to see that happen, Damien.
I think so. There are some similarities between this West Ham team that he's got now and the Everton team that he was so good with so many years ago. And to kind of take as many blows as what he's taken, and so far as the Manchester United one would have been enough to finish off a lot of people, then going out to Sociedad and, you know, Sunderland and West Ham. But to have the fortitude and the determination, and I suppose the belief in his principles to make the comeback that he's made shows great character from him. And I'm really pleased. As you said, it's a good story on a human element. But, West Ham is a fabulous football club and, they have some money there. So perhaps they will invest. And this might end up not being just a kind of a one-season wonder. Maybe they could be competing in the top six for years to come, because, you know, they have the stadium, and I'm pretty sure that if West Ham are in the upper echelons of the Premier League, they will fill that Olympic Stadium, absolutely guaranteed, you know, season tickets as well. So it's guaranteed money for the football club, and maybe then they would be prepared to, throw some serious money at the squad. So it's a good story. It's fantastic to see. And I like West Ham. I think they're a good football club. You know, the fans are lively, I suppose, to put it mildly. But you know, I've always got a little soft spot for West Ham.
I always regret lads never going to Upton Park. Did you ever? Obviously, you played, I'm sure, there many times, Damien.
Yeah, listen, like, I mean, you know, Upton Park or the Bowlin, as some of them call it, was a great place to go. You know, when you kind of get to the, I remember always going to those games when you get to the street at the top and they have that statue of the three England players at the World Cup. And then you kind of turn left and all the, you know, it's real old fashioned burger stands, hat scarves and flags, and it could take you 15, 20 minutes just to move 200 yards because there's so many people out on the street. And then the bus used to have to reverse into it, you know, because it was such a tight space and, you know, stuff's getting pelted at the windows. It was one of those last few grounds where, you know, in a half empty beer can would come flying and hit the window as you're reversing in, and it always took forever. But, you know, it was a fabulous stadium. And obviously I got to play at the Olympic Stadium as well. Which is different, really, to be honest with you. But, you know, I suppose for the progression of the club and the corporate side of it and the bigger capacity, it was great. But I was such a huge fan of Upton Park that, you know, if they just kind of, that one stand on the far side, if they could have got a nice big high stand in there. It was one of the old-fashioned stadiums where the fans are really close to you, really good atmosphere, small changing rooms, as opposed to the Olympic Stadium where you could get lost in the changing rooms. They were that big, you know, and there's about 2-minute walk just to get to the pitch. So, but look, I mean, they're a good club, and as I said, I do have a soft spot for them.
Beer cans against windows. Dan, were you ever at Upton Park?
No, I wasn't, actually. I didn't make it to, and I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks back, about, you know, clubs moving from stadiums and so on. Like, there was actually a really good piece. It was a poignant piece when West Ham moved, and it's almost, it touches on what sort of Damo was referring to there. It was like interviews with all the people who ran the shops and, say, the pubs and the, you know, the businesses around the area where the old ground was, because you sort of forget, like, once you take a club out of there, like, you take out, like, it's like taking a hotel or something out of a small town, you know, you take away all the customers that come with it. And, like, there's no replacing that. Like, yeah. there is no replacing that in your life. Like, it's one thing that very much strikes me about going to the UK and going to England, and like, even sort of some of the northern towns or whatever, like Preston and places like that, where you can be there on a Thursday and Friday and it's so dead. But, like, on Saturday, it's football that brings the place to life. You know, all of a sudden, people just come out of nowhere. And, you know, the stadiums that are in the city centres or as close of the city centre, I think we mentioned this a while, but even Nottingham Forest was another one. Like, you can almost walk sort of out of the town along by the trench and stuff. And, like, there is something that's great about those places. You know, there's a real natural energy and there's an economy that goes with it, which is very different to your, you know, getting a car sort of 20, 25 minutes out to somewhere where you just drive there and you drive back, or you get a tube there or whatever and a tube back. Like, maybe in this time that we're in now, maybe we're just nostalgic for, like, any kind of, you know, contact and crowds. And even that scene that sort of Damo describes there, it's unthinkable now. And where we're at, but it's why, like, there's a great sort of like, I'm very glad that the Irish stadium never moved to Abbottstown, which obviously was something that could have happened, and there might have been very good reasons for it at the time. But I love the fact still that you have the Aviva there in the centre of the city, pretty much, so that when games come back, you know, there's an energy around town when there's a game on, and that is something that you really miss it, and hopefully we'll have it all back soon. But I never, to answer your question in a very long-winded way, I never got to Upton Park, but like it struck me as one that it's like Goodison and some of those other places that you'd like to have experienced it.
Yeah, because like you got like, I mean, the side that the players came out and the two ends behind either goal were big enough stands, you know. And I always think it was just a small little shed at the opposite side. If they could have just redeveloped that, you know, you could have boosted the capacity there to maybe 45,000-50,000 and kept it right in the heart of the community, because they're, you know, they're passionate fans, the West Ham fans, you know, demanding fans. But you know, grounds like, you know, I played for QPR at Loftus Road. I mean, that's another iconic, for me, I think that's an iconic stadium. Like, I mean, it's really small and compact, but I used to love playing there because little two tiers and you're almost looking directly up, and you think the fella on the top tier, if he fell out, he'd land on the pitch. It's almost, you know, that vertical, and there is something nice about that, and I'm glad I got to experience stuff like that, because some of these new stadiums can be a little bit, I won't say sterile, but just perfect, you know.
Yeah, they're almost like they're all the same.
Too polished.
They're all like Southampton is one of the ones. Like,
the Emirates.
It's just very, you could, it's like it's a Lego model or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, going to the cinema or something. But I'm just thinking, like, Damo, you went over in, say, 2000 or like around that time. I'm trying to think, in your first spell at Leicester, did you get to play in any of the, like, the old grounds that are gone now? Like,
yeah,
the old, the Dell or Highbury or any of those?
I got to play at Highbury, which, you know, I was really, really young. But, like, I mean, that's an, I don't know, some people will remember, but the entrance of Highbury was almost like walking into a house, and you had the marble floor with the crest in it. And that's, like, for me growing up watching football in the 90s, you know, that narrow tunnel, you know, the changing rooms, you know, some of the changing rooms in the older stadiums, the bath was still there, you know, the big 15-man bath. You know, I remember Burnley only got rid of that quite recently. You know, there was only, I remember Burnley, there was only ever like two showers
I mean, literally two showers, and then there was one big bath. So, like, obviously players, the bath went out of fashion for whatever reason, hygiene probably. But, like, I remember at Burnley, you'd have 20 players wanting to get showered after a game, and there'd be a queue. People are, like, sitting on the edge of the bath, and people are, like, you know, especially the foreign lads would be looking at it going, why is this here, you know? And, like, well, back in the day, 20 lads used to pile in there after a game. It was funny, but, you know, I got to play at one of the good grounds that I played. It was the baseball ground.
Derby
County. I remember I got to play there once. Highfield Road was another one. Another of those old type stadiums that are gone. And listen, they were all decrepit old things and falling down, and you could see there was wood rot and stuff. But as a kid growing up in the 90s, watching all those Premier League games at, you know, Coventry beating Man United with Dion Dublin, Darren Huckerby at Highfield Road, you know, they were the Gordon Strachan on the sideline. They were the days I remember. So I do kind of treasure those memories, to be honest with you, that I did get to play at Highbury. It was a smashing stadium.
And do you have to pinch yourself at the very beginning when you're like walking around Highbury, when you're just at the early stages of your career, Damien?
Not really. Without sounding too kind of, not arrogant, but, you know, yeah. It was a job, you know what I mean? And I was a football player, and I tried not to allow myself to kind of, you know, get carried away by any of that. You know, I had a job to do, and I tried to stay focused on what I was there to do. Maybe afterwards, you know, you'd walk back out and have a look around and think of all the iconic moments that happened. You know, I remember, you know, standing in the tunnel and thinking back to the Vieira Keane times and stuff like that. So, it was a fantastic stadium, and there's so much soul in those stadiums as well, you know.
Absolutely, so you can't buy it, lads, can you? Let's just break away for the moment to take an update from the rugby. The second half just about to start. Ireland leading Italy in Rome. James Downey.
Yeah, hi, John. Yeah, fine finishes. We checked in earlier on to the first half, and 27-10. Ireland looked extremely good. Let the Italians in for a try right at the end, though, just before half time, which is the only blot in the copybook at the moment. But you got to be happy with what they've done. You know, the challenge is for them to keep building on this and to be ruthless against the Italians. But coming into it, they showed plenty of ambition, and that's all we can have asked for.
Yeah, Hugo Keenan and Gary Ringrose among the try scorers. So what are we expecting in the second half? The key thing is to just get the bonus point, obviously.
Yeah, I think we should get the bonus point. We just have to get there one try. I think the challenge now for them is to keep up that intensity they showed in the first half. It'll be easy to fall off. But if they can just keep that, keep the way they've been playing, and hopefully get through this injury free. Keith Earls has come on now, and I haven't seen who's gone off for him.
Larmour.
So we've just kicked off on that. So, it's just got to keep that variety in attack and keep that intensity up and just be ruthless against this Italian side.
OK, James Downey, we'll be back to you shortly for updates on Ireland against Italy in the Six Nations, set for a first win of 2021 for Andy Farrell and his men. Damien and Dan, and Neil Lennon, he's gone as manager of Celtic. Was only a matter of time, probably 18 points behind Rangers in the Premiership, 10 in a row, dreams up in smoke, an ill-advised trip to Dubai. What now when the reset button is pressed? Damien, who do you think should be the new manager of Celtic? Who are the contenders?
Well, it's a big decision because Rangers seem to be on the comeback trail and seem to be in a pretty good place for a period of sustained kind of success, really. So it's up to Celtic now to raise their game. You know, I won't say Celtic kind of got away with it for the last number of years, but with Rangers being a non-entity, I suppose the board might have looked at it and thought, well, we don't need to spend so much money because we're going to win the league, we're going to get into the qualification of the Champions League and more likely the Europa League, or at worst the Europa League. So they didn't feel the need for that huge investment because, you know, they're winning the league by 20 points instead of 40 points. And I think that's underinvestment has probably come back to haunt Celtic a little bit. So I suppose the ownership or the board there at Celtic need to make a decision. I don't think it's kind of, you know, people are talking about maybe, you know, an untried manager, you know, a young up-and-coming guy. I'm not sure that's the job, because with Rangers being in the position that they're in now, I think someone like an Eddie Howe would be a good fit, an experienced manager with a certain amount of know-how, but he's going to need funding. That squad probably needs a bit updating, bringing together. But look, Neil Lennon got a fair crack at it. I suppose it was only last weekend, really, when the league was completely out of reach or pretty much out of reach that it decided to end it. Which is pretty fair, I think, to be honest here. It wasn't like he was sacked at the first sign of trouble. I think he was given long enough over the course of the year. But I just think years of underinvestment at Celtic has finally come home to roost. And it's probably the reason that Brendan Rodgers decided to leave, because, you know, once you've won a couple of leagues up there, the Champions League is what becomes the main carrot. And I think Brendan Rodgers probably saw that it was getting more and more difficult to get into the group stages of the Champions League, and you needed some serious investment just to come through that third qualifying round. And maybe he didn't feel he was getting it. That's why he moved on to Leicester, because I'm pretty sure if he was getting the investment required at Celtic and he was pretty much guaranteed Champions League group stages every year, it would have been a more kind of tempting for him to stay. But whoever comes in is going to need to have an overhaul, or maybe kind of a freshening up of that squad, which is going to cost some money, because, you know, I suppose for the betterment of Scottish football, really, up there, Rangers are back, so there'll be a bit more excitement about the league from now on.
Roy Keane, Mick McCarthy, Damien Duff, any of these lads realistically in contention, Dan?
I'd be surprised. I mean, Roy Keane, you remember, turned down the job just after he became Ireland assistant. Because I remember playing a game, and God, I think it was a game against Italy in Fulham, I think it was, around the 2014 World Cup. And I mean, he was only in the door at the Ireland job, and I thought he was going to be gone. And it didn't happen at that stage. And I suppose you think, like, I mean, it's, what, 7 years have passed since then, almost 7 years have passed since then. And I don't know, do they go there again? I mean, Mick McCarthy doing a great job at Cardiff. But probably, I'm not so sure, like, the type of job that the Celtic job is, it's not about going in and getting a team organised and getting it fixed and sorted. It's a different type of gig, really. Damien Duff was there. I don't know, like, he still hasn't managed a team at senior level, and I'm not sure if they're going to give it to someone, you know, as a first job. As maybe, as sort of, as Damien mentioned, if Rangers were still on, you know, down in their luck, then maybe you could afford to take a chance, because you'll probably win the league anyway, and you can grow into it. But I really can't see either of those three. I mean, the irony about Rangers coming along and getting much better is that it's really improved Scotland's standing in Europe, and there's a very good chance that both teams will have a chance of qualifying for the Champions League. And part of the difficulty of the Celtic Champions League route, and Brendan Rodgers definitely did the right thing, it was the ruthless thing to do, got a lot of stick over it, and he'll probably never be welcomed back, maybe in the way that he might have been. But it was pragmatic, like, the right cold call to make. You know, as Celtic manager, you have to go through four rounds in Europe. And often, like, even in those early rounds, as we found, they can be vulnerable because their squad, like, isn't amazing. So I think they need to go with someone who needs to be able to cope with the fact, you know, they're expected to win most weeks, but they're expected to also be competitive in Europe. So you probably need, like, an Eddie Howe type figure, you know, someone with a reputation for maybe progressive styles of play and stuff, rather than someone who's going to come in and, I don't know, make them solid or something. Like, they don't need to be made solid. They actually need to be more expressive, really. And I don't know where the base is for Celtic now. Like, is it, you know, how attractive a job is it? Like, I still think there's a massive attraction of the job. But in saying that, losing Brendan Rodgers to Leicester sort of tells you that if someone's got a chance of managing in the top half of the Premier League or thereabouts, or think they might, they're probably not going to be mad on going there. So with all the history and the prestige and all that comes with the club, someone like Eddie Howe is probably a decent fellow. So Steve Clarke is fancied, like, his stock is high because he's got Scotland to the Euros. I think you're probably talking in that bracket, to be honest. Rafa was mentioned at one point. I'm sure there'd be a popularity with that, although he's not, again, necessarily the most progressive. Like, he wouldn't be reviewed as sort of a manager who's going to have to play amazing football or anything, but I mean, it's Rafa, it's a huge name. I think that's where you're talking, you know. So, like, David Moyes was mentioned with the Celtic job a couple of years ago, and they wouldn't have him. And unless we know what David Moyes is going to bring to a team, I'm contradicting myself, but. But they probably have to look at someone in that broad bracket, I don't think. And I'm not sure those Irish candidates you mentioned are going to come into it.
Celtic fans, 53106, who do you want to be your next manager? There's plenty of you out there. We know you want to get involved. Just send us a text, a really detailed one from one of our texters earlier, because we were talking about it in the news round. A good few players will leave this summer, but they'll bring in big money. Christopher Eyer, Edward, Ryan Christie, etc. They're bringing money which can be reinvested. Dermot Desmond won't invest any money. It's not the model he's overseen to date. Rangers have admitted they will have to sell assets this summer because they borrowed and leveraged to get players in and pay wages to stop the 10 in a row. As for scoffing at Celtic's European pedigree, there'd be lots twice last year, who finished fourth in Serie A, 5 points off Juventus. As for Duff, he walked out on Celtic before their biggest season ever. He can stay where he is. He did the same with Shamrock Rovers in Ireland. I'd take Eddie Howe and a good director of football and build for the future a long-term plan that connects the club and the fans again, and that delivers some decent European nights, which have been cheated out of due to bad management and a bad board over the last few years. There's a lot of long-term issues to be ironed out at Celtic, but it's not as bad as it has been made out. That is one of our textures of the strong opinion on 53106. Damien, but if you're Rafa Benitez, Damien, like, you're a European Cup winner, you're a Europa League winner, you have a proven track record, you're an excellent manager. Is Celtic the kind of club you want to be going to?
I think so. I think he's kind of been to the very top of football management. He's been up to China. It's kind of his level, really, to come back in at. You know, he's not going to come in at a really top Premier League job anymore. He probably doesn't have the heart to take up a struggling Premier League team. It's a good job. I think it's obviously a good job. But I think any manager that interviews for that job, the first thing they're going to say is, what funds will be made available, or what can I do? Because Rangers... that text you read out there, I'm not sure about that. I don't know how accurate that is about Rangers borrowing money to stop the 10 in a row and stuff like that. And I'm not quite sure what Rangers' finances are. But they certainly have a challenge again, you know. So whoever goes in there is probably going to have to be good with youth players, because maybe, you know, they're going to buy one or two big names, but then develop the younger players, maybe buy some untested players across Europe, young guys, develop them and maybe sell them on. Whether Rafa Benitez is the man for that or not, I don't know. But, you know, with his experience and his level of football knowledge, I think he would be a good fit for Celtic. I know maybe... it's a difficult one. It's difficult unless you know where Rafa's head is at, to be honest with you. You know, I think, you know, as a name and as a coach, it's certainly good for Celtic. But I think managers that are going up there would certainly have some questions for the Celtic board, because any manager, like if Eddie Howe goes up there and it doesn't go well for him, and doesn't go well would mean like finishing second to Rangers, then, you know, he's not going to improve his stock and ultimately come back into the Premier League, I suppose, like Brendan Rodgers did. So I think the managers going up there would have a few questions for Celtic board, as opposed to the board questioning the manager as well, you know.
53106. Frank Lampard for the next Celtic manager, maybe, says Aaron in Galway. Lads, two words for Celtic. Chris Hughton. Strong character needed to manage Celtic. He must come first and must play with style. Not sure Eddie Howe would be strong enough, says Jim and Marino. And as a Spurs fan, I'd like to throw Jose Mourinho's hat into the ring for the Celtic job, says John.
I have great time for Chris Hughton, but I'm not sure his teams are necessarily regarded as for playing with style. He's a slightly more... functional, I think, is the word, isn't it? Yeah, 100%. And he has a job at Forest at the moment, which, to be honest, like, there's probably a potential in it there. So I wouldn't, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure about that one.
Somebody says, surely with Roy Keane joining Instagram, his future is a social media influencer, says Owen. One of our textures. Just some breaking news.
Right.
It was a good Instagram post during the week. Sin bin to be trialled on hurling. Some breaking news. GA Congress has voted in favour of the motion on cynical play, which will see penalties awarded in both codes for denial of goal scoring chances. Let's take an update from the rugby. James Downey, Ireland have got the bonus point.
Yeah, they certainly have, John, and they deserved it as well. 34-10. What you've seen is Ireland really just turned the screw, and the Italians are under a bit more pressure now as well. And they nearly get in the corner here. Ronan Gallagher up the left-hand side. James Lowe pops it inside to him, and they just hold off. But yeah, they've been in complete control from this. A couple of injuries, perhaps. Ty Furlong's gone off, and Dave Kilcornan gone off, and they were playing extremely well, especially in the first half. But another caution, I suppose, Ty Furlong was taken off with and they're looking at his ankle, and hopefully he'll be all right come next week. But look, Ireland have been really good. Bonus point in the bag. Try and keep the Italians out.
Okay, James, we've got to take a break. Just to linked to the break with his text on 53106. Lads, Indiana Jones would not take the Celtic job. That is from Andrew in Cork. Damien Delaney and Dan McDonald will be back with more football chat after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
We were young boys once in an 80s world. Cedar wood road, trees and the poles, concrete for grass and the gates for gold. Shoes full of holes, play from the soul, like Diego in Mexico.
Yeah, that was a short snippet of the song, the new song, The Game That We Love, from the former Shelburne footballer Stewie Byrne. He joined Adrian Barry and Shane Hannon on OTB AM yesterday to discuss the release of the song. You can get the full song on Spotify or wherever you get your music and CD video by searching The Game That We Love on YouTube. So the best of luck, Stewie. Well done. Damien Delaney, are you involved in music at all? Can you pick up a guitar and sing a few ballads down in Cork?
Yeah, I could pick up a guitar, yeah. Wouldn't say that I would be prone to a few ballads. Maybe back in the day when we were allowed to sing songs in pubs, I might be persuaded to sing one or two. But you know, my music career is firmly in my living room, just picking away on a guitar.
What's your taste in music, Damien?
Blues, rhythm and blues, and rock and roll, really.
And would you be a Sultan's a Ping man, given from your native county?
Yeah. Who?
Sultans of Ping.
And who are they?
Are they not a Cork band?
I don't know, they might be.
Where's my jumper, Damien? Where's my jumper?
Frank and Walters.
Oh, they, who?
You pulling my leg, Damien.
More like kind of, you know, Bruce Springsteen, Gaslight Anthem, that type of stuff, you know. Don't know any of those Cork bands. Rory Gallagher, that's about the only fellow I know.
He's got to listen, he's bringing Stalin to dinner, John. Like, he's got a more world view when it comes
exactly.
to this stuff.
You're never going to let that program note thing in Crystal Palace down, Damien.
Yeah, he's got more of a global chaos view rather than just keeping it all local, you know. You don't have to limit them to Cork bands. Like, there's probably there's some kind of Russian anarchist stuff when he listens to in his spare time or something, you know. But yeah, Stewie Burns, dude, it's pretty impressive though, Stewie. Like, he's really you know, I'm sure it's the type of thing that a lot of people talk about doing. It's like people talk about writing their novel or something, you know what I mean?
Don't.
I'm sure he's someone who's like, he's had a talent for music, and a lot of people are probably just, particularly if you're coming from a background of being a footballer and stuff, you can imagine, you know, there's always a potential for people to just poke fun at you or whatever, but he's very much like his own man. He's done his own thing, and he's getting this stuff out there, you know, he's getting it released, so... I fully admire it. I think some of the stuff is decent as well from what I've heard.
Yeah, that's great. Dan McDonald, you write for a living. You write every day. I'm sure, have you not written any lyrics that could make millions?
No, I haven't. No, to be honest, I'm too busy singing songs to a baby daughter at the moment. That's as far as my lyrical expression probably goes. It's not very sophisticated.
And that's more admirable anyway. Fair play to you. Fair play to you, Dan and Damien. We got an update from the West Brom Brighton game. This is from Dave Eason.
West Brom 1, Brighton 0. A VAR check, one of the most remarkable VAR checks I've ever seen, has disallowed a Brighton goal after a very, very long time. Lee Mason blew his whistle. Lewis Dunk immediately took a free kick from about 20 yards out that flew past Sam Johnston in the West Brom goal. Lee Mason immediately disallowed it, suggesting that he hadn't blown the whistle before the free kick. Then a whisper in his ear told him that maybe he had, and the goal was then given, Lee Mason pointing to the centre spot. Then a huge wait as another VAR check looked at the goal once more. There was a conversation between both managers and the referee, and the referee then decided to give a free kick once more. Lewis Dunk took the free kick and Sam Johnston saved it quite easily. So Carl Bartley's goal still separates these two sides. It's West Brom 1, Brighton 0.
And Aaron Connolly is in the Brighton team for that match today at the Hawthorns. Let's get an update from James Downey on the rugby Italy against Ireland. Ireland are going to win, James, but has it been an impressive display? James? Okay, we seem to have an issue with James' line there. It's 34 points for Ireland, it's 10 points for Italy, and we have the bonus point in the game in the Six Nations in Rome. We'll get a more considered view from James Downey a little bit later on. I'll just give you some discussion now on this FAI CEO, Jonathan Hill, who said that the controversy surrounding a motivational video that was shown to the Republic of Ireland squad before their friendly with England last year was a factor in Damien Duff's departure. 41-year-old Duff stepped down as one of Stephen Kenny's assistants in January, 2 months on from Videogate. No reason for the decision was given at the time. Now, speaking to Nathan Murphy for OTB Sports yesterday, Jonathan Hill, who was appointed to his role with the FAI in October, said there were a number of reasons behind Duff's decision to step away.
The big news is Damien Duff's departure as one of Stephen Kenny's assistant. What's your understanding of why he decided to leave?
Well, look, I had a long and private conversation with Damien, and we talked about a whole range of issues. And I don't think there was one single issue that Damien was pointing to in relation to his decision. But he articulated very clearly his thoughts in relation to the association, above all else, in all honesty. But also in relation to Irish football, and he has taken his decision. I respect that. One thing I would say from that conversation is that Damien is completely 100% committed to supporting Stephen and the national team in the World Cup qualification process this year. You couldn't find an Irishman who is more proud and/or more hopeful, if you like, in relation to success. So Damien took his decision. It was a private decision, and I respect that completely.
Did you try and convince him to stay?
No, I spoke to him some time after he's taken his decision. I think Damien is the type of guy who, once he's taken a decision, he sticks with it, to be honest. So that wasn't the thrust of our conversation. It was more about understanding just more generally his thoughts in relation to the FAI and to international football, and it was a fascinating conversation and a really useful conversation. So I'm pleased that we had it.
Jonathan Hill there, the FAI CEO, speaking to Nathan Murphy. We're going to get to that in a second. Let's just break away for another update on Italy and Ireland. We've got James Downey back now.
Yeah, hi John. It's 34-10 to Ireland. Bonus point in the bag just after halftime with CJ Stander getting the crucial score, but Ireland have looked pretty good now. Hopefully from this now, 20 minutes to go, that you'd like to see someone like Craig Casey and Ryan Baird come on to get their first caps and get a good bit of time out there rather than a 5 minutes towards the end just to build on that. But Ireland looked extremely impressive. The Italians have fired a few shots, but they've been in complete control, and it's a testament to the staff, I suppose, and how much they've come out this week.
Okay, James Downey, back to you shortly. 34 for Ireland, 10 for Italy in the Six Nations, a victory forthcoming in that match in Rome. So Damien and Daniel, just to let you know, our football coverage, thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Damien Duff has left the Republic of Ireland, set up well-regarded as a coach, but I suppose we do have to move on. And Stephen Kenny has appointed a new assistant. Anthony Barry has been coaching with Chelsea, Daniel, and was the assistant to the former Sligo Rovers boss Paul Cook at Wigan.
Yeah, there was a bit of chat across the week that Stephen Kenny had made progress, and I think it was reported in a few places, and I assume people probably had the same experience that I did, that they were keeping it a pretty tight secret who it was. And all I could really glean from people, it was a bit left field. It wasn't someone who was on the list of sort of candidates that had been out there, which was, you know, sort of ex-Irish internationals had been mentioned. And they've gone for someone who is the current Chelsea first team coach. I think a lot of people's response would have been Anthony Who, really, at the time. Would have had to do their research on it. But I think the more research you do, as much as everyone can almost sound good on paper, it does look like an interesting appointment. It would appear to be a good appointment in the sense that he does appear to be a coach who's well regarded. His star is on the rise. As you mentioned, you know, he's 34. He's a Scouser. He had a sort of a modest enough playing career, went into the coaching route early, and seems to be held in high regard everywhere he's gone. As you mentioned, he was the first team coach at Wigan, and he also did his pro licence with Frank Lampard and Jody Morris. He was on the same course, and they got sort of, I suppose they saw his, I suppose his ability there. I saw a report in the I think it was an Athletic profile last year. Apparently, he was like the top student in that pro licence class, very well regarded, and he was brought to Chelsea last summer. And when Lampard and co got the bullet, he's been kept on, and it does appear like he is being kept on. Might even have extended his deal there, and his strength appears to be set pieces and defensive shape. I think Chelsea have got a lot of credit this year for their set piece improvement. There's a couple of bits and clips and stuff that have been pointed out, and from speaking to people who have been around Chelsea and go to games and stuff, they would say that is very much his domain. So he is someone who's a coach, you know, like, you know, he turned down the Fleetwood manager's job recently, but he is very much viewed as a coach. You know, that's where he's got his reputation. When Damien Duff went in, I think, you know, Stephen Kenny at the time, he was looking for like a younger coach to come in who was on top of, you know, someone that was working in the game at the moment at a good level. And Anthony Barry ticks that box. He's just not a household name and an Irish icon that all the players will, you know his face when he walks in the door. So he has to like win players over in a different way. And I'm sure Damo can speak about that in a minute, about what a coach needs to do. Because he's got a very like tight window to do it. Like he's going to come in, you know, on a Sunday ahead of a game in Serbia on the Wednesday. And like Stephen Kenny is not a big hands-on coach on the training ground. He does give responsibilities to his coaches. So it'll be Keith Andrews and now Anthony Barry that'll be out there doing a lot of the stuff. So he is he's clearly met at the Premier League level for a reason, and he's well regarded. He did play with Darren Randolph at Accrington briefly. Shawnee Maguire, I believe, at Accrington as well briefly. Rory Higgins is a staff member. He was at Coventry with him. So he won't be a complete he'll know people in there. But it's still, on the face of it, seems like a good appointment. But I don't know, Damon, what do you think? Like, I mean, it's great on paper, but obviously I suppose players who haven't heard of him are just going to be looking at him and thinking, you know, what's this guy like? But they might have heard in the game maybe that his reputation is positive.
Yeah, look, I mean, first of all, he's obviously an extremely bright young coach, because to make it to the level that he's at now, and especially when Frank Lampard got sacked and moved on, that Chelsea retained his services, which means they clearly think very, very highly of him. And Thomas Tuchel has kept him on as first team coach as well. So Thomas Tuchel is clearly impressed by him as well, which means he must be a very, very, very good coach. And it is a good thing for Ireland, because it's another set of eyes from the outside, you know. And I know I take the point there, having an Irish legend come in as a coach can be great, but I mean, being an Irish legend doesn't really help you win games of football. Being a good coach does. So he is a fresh set of eyes from the outside that doesn't have any kind of skin in the game, so to speak, with Ireland. So it'll be a very clinical view that you'll get from him, and he will see the game in a certain way. And I think it's nothing but positive, really, from an Irish point of view. You know, Stephen will obviously do the bulk of the prep work and stuff, but to have a coach on the training ground with the ideas that he has, and obviously if he's first team coach at Chelsea, he has some very good ideas, can put on a very, very good session. So the players will no doubt enjoy his sessions. Believe me, you know, if the Chelsea players didn't like his training sessions, he wouldn't be there and he'd be sacked that very day, you know. So he obviously can put on a very good session. And obviously with opposition analysis, he'll be watching games all over Europe with Chelsea. But then he'll also be analysing the opposition for Ireland and coming up with a plan of how best to hurt the opposition or to kind of limit your weaknesses. So I think it's a really, really, really good appointment. And it's only positive from my point of view.
Yeah, you played for well-known managers, Damien, Roy Hodgson, Sam Allardyce, Roy Keane, but sometimes we don't talk about the people that are really important behind them, and that's the coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, when you play with someone like, for someone like Sam Allardyce and stuff, you know, the manager has his ideas and how he sees football, and then it's up to the coaches. If the manager's not, you know, like Stephen's not the most hands-on on the training ground, obviously he takes team shape and stuff. But obviously putting on sessions is a lot of responsibility, because you're trying to get the manager's ideas across to the players. And I'm pretty sure this guy has a catalogue full of really good training sessions and really good ideas that the players will enjoy, whilst also getting the manager's job, manager's message across. So, having a good first team coach is really important. You know, sometimes it can be the key or the link to the manager. Sometimes if a manager doesn't want to get on a certain level of kind of have a rapport with players, sometimes managers just like to stand back. But then it's important that the coaches have a good feel for what the mood is in the training ground, and you know, having a good captain or a good coach can do that. So the coach can come back and say, look, the lads are feeling a certain type of way. The manager can take that into consideration. No, he might not care, but some managers don't care. Someone like Sam Allardyce wouldn't care, but like, you know, it is important to have a good go between. So I think it's an excellent appointment. He's an up-and-coming coach. He's obviously extremely ambitious because he has a fantastic job at Chelsea, but now he wants to get into the international setup. And it looks like, really, from all the interviews and things that I've read about him, that he's looking to broaden his own horizons as well. So that can only benefit the Irish group.
What else do we take out of the Jonathan Hill briefing, the FAI CEO yesterday, Dan? I was reading on the front page of the Times today that he's looking to... Well, they're looking at, generally as the FAI, to have fans potentially at the Aviva Stadium for these Euro games. So there must be a degree of quiet confidence that actually matches will be held in Dublin this year, because it's been a bit of a questionable subject.
Yeah, there was a lot in his overall appearance. He hadn't done one yet. So there's sort of 10 different things you could probably discuss from, you know, so that was one of them. You know, we'll probably come back to some of them again at different times, if you know what I mean. Yeah. That was striking for me, that basically, if you want to summarise his point, is it's that UEFA are basically saying, if you want to remain the co-host of the Euros, you need to have fans in your stadium. Now, UEFA can't demand that, of course, of the FAI. You know, they can do so much and say, we want you to do it. But the FAI obviously have to, you know, get government approval for that. And yeah, like, it's obviously, you have to be very careful with that. I mean, games involving Poland, Sweden and Slovakia, while there's a certain prestige in having it, like, if they are the first games, you know, the first major games in Ireland this year that they're opened up spectators, like, I'm not so sure. Like, you know, like,
it sounds ambitious. It sounds ambitious.
And as well, like, you know, what's the view towards if people sort of get in? You know, travel is obviously a very complicated thing at the moment. Like, there's crap going on in Grafton Street today. Like, there's an angry mood out there at the moment for a variety of reasons. And, like, the idea, the concept of an international tournament to me is about fans coming in and mingling. And, like I don't know, are people really stirred enough by, you know, getting 10,000 people out to the Aviva to watch Poland play Slovakia or Sweden? I think there's a lot of people out there who want to go and watch their own teams, you know, in whatever code, in whatever sport it might be. And I'm not sure if this is the event that you want to make is the... I understand the argument both ways behind it, but I sort of have assumed that this wouldn't happen. You know, I've sort of been chatting to people about it, and at times they'll be like, well, listen, doesn't look good, does it? And that's the general vibe and mood. Whereas Jonathan Hill's tone yesterday, by contrast, was way more positive about that. Now, look, I know he's from a commercial marketing background. He could just be a sort of a positive speaker. But, like, in the context of, like, the news cycle, I sort of found this slightly jarring. Now, he hasn't moved to Ireland yet.
Just quickly on that, Dan. Yeah, the fact that he isn't here, maybe, would it be unfair to say maybe that's the reason for his view?
Maybe. Like, he's picking up papers at the moment, probably in the UK or whatever, and Boris is talking about having fans at the you know, England-Czech Republic game. Like, it's just unthinkable here for us at the moment, as far as I'm concerned, to think that, like, we could open our doors for that game and those games in the summer when people can't go and watch any of their teams in any code, whatever it might be. I'm not sure if it's a hill you want to die on. I mean, that's just a dreadful pun. But, like, it is sort of very sort of true. So I don't know, but it was striking. Very confident about that. Very confident about the World Cup 2030 bit as well. But again, it is his background. He could just be a positive speaker. Whether it translates to stuff actually happening, I remain to be convinced.
Okay, we'll wait and see. We've got to leave it there. We're going to come back with more football chat after four, after the news. Let's just, before that, get an update from the Italy-Ireland game in the Six Nations. The tries are coming thick and fast, James Downey.
They certainly are, John. It's 41-10 to Ireland, and Ireland have had two tries knocked off as well on the back of that. Firstly, CJ Stander gets over it. TMO goes upstairs. There's a knock-on and a build-up to that one. So that one gets scrapped off. The Italians get into 13 men from the resulting penalty into the corner off a driving maul. Will Connors gets over for a second try of the game. Johnny Sexton converts to bring it 41-10. And then just there now, James Lowe gets a score chalked off. Craig Casey, just a little slight forward pass, and the TMO rightly pulls it back for a forward pass. But Ireland looked much the better side, in complete control. And at the moment, it's 41-10 with 10 left. And you've got Ryan Baird on the field as well as Craig Casey making their debuts.
OK, James Downey, we'll be back after four with more updates and analysis after the Ireland-Italy game concludes. Just to give you some scores from the Premier League and the Championship. Manchester City 2, West Ham 1 earlier on. Diaz and Stones with the goals. The City now 13 points clear at the top of the Premier League. 20 wins in a row in all competitions for the Blues. West Bromwich Albion won Brighton 0 as a half-time score. In the Championship, full-time Bournemouth won Watford 0. Half-times, Barnsley 1, Millwall 1, Birmingham City 0, QPR 1. It's Blackburn Rovers 1, Coventry City 0, Brentford 0, Stoke City 1. It is Luton Town 0, Sheffield Wednesday 2, Middlesbrough 0, Cardiff City 1. Another good day for Mick McCarthy. Preston 1, Huddersfield 0, Rotherham 0, Reading 1, and Swansea 0, Bristol City 0. Don't go away.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. Just let you know, in the rugby, 41 for Ireland, 10 for Italy. 4 minutes to go in Rome in the Six Nations. Bonus point secured. So we're joined by the former Republic of Ireland defender Damien Delaney and the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonald, to talk about the beautiful game. Football and Off the Ball brought to you thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. And don't forget that next week's Paddy Power half hour, we have launched a brand new segment which is aimed at allowing you to reclaim a losing bet. It's called Near Miss. It does exactly what it says in the tin. If you've had a single bet or an accumulator that has fallen down because of a dodgy VAR decision, someone's armpit was offside or a player's taken a dive, before you fling your phone at the wall, take a screen grab of your losing bet. Be sure to include your bet slip ID and then just send it into us, either using the Near Miss, PP Near Miss hashtag, so PP Near Miss hashtag on Twitter. Hit us with a DM on Instagram or send your snap to us on WhatsApp on 087 9180 180. We'll do the rest. So we'll announce those selected winners every Friday at the end of the Paddy Power half hour. You can see all the T's and C's on otbsports.com and stay tuned to OTB Social for more. So the hashtag PP Near Miss for the Paddy Power half hour. Just some text in here on 53106. Great show as always. Damo is the man, says Joe. The new Irish coach sounds like a step up from Duff. A real elite operator clearly can only be a positive. Underrated coach Paul Cook would be a great appointment for Celtic. Not glamorous, not probably, but ideal to buy and sell his way to a squad over 3 or 4 years. Another one of our texters, Kevin, says Celtic should go all out and get Gerrard. It would drive the football world loopy. Can't see that happening. And hey lads, I follow Newcastle. Are they going down? I think so, says a Galway listener. Are Fulham going to catch Newcastle, Damien?
Typical optimistic Newcastle fan there, always looking on the bright side. Tomorrow is huge. You know, I think Monday night, Crystal Palace beating Brighton, just to give them some breathing room. And obviously, no, Palace are playing Fulham this weekend, I think. So if Fulham can get a win there and drag themselves into it with their momentum, I would fully expect to see them to keep motoring away from it, which drags Brighton and Newcastle and Burnley right into the mix. And I know West Brom were winning there today. So too difficult to say. I mean, I'd like to think that Steve Bruce, with his level of experience, and I know that's going to drive all the Newcastle fans mad because they're sick of hearing terms like that, but, you know, his remit is to keep Newcastle in the league, not to be pretty or not to be aesthetically nice or coaching or pretty football. It's to stay in the league. And I think that if it comes to the crunch and Newcastle are really dragged into a serious relegation battle, I think they're equipped enough to dog it out and get draws. I'd be surprised if Newcastle went down. I think Brighton would probably go before them because the type of style that Brighton have, their lack of goals, I think it's very, very difficult to play that bright football that Brighton play when you're in the relegation zone. You know, sometimes the edge can just come off it, confidence can drain out of you. And if you've not got a solid base to fall back on, I think Brighton could be the ones that'll go along with, well, obviously Sheffield United and possibly West Brom as well. But there's a long way to go yet. There's still 12, 13, 14 games to go for some people. So I think Newcastle should be okay would be my answer to that.
Chelsea, Man United, you're doing the game tomorrow, Damien, with Stephen Doyle. Full commentary here on News Talk and Off the Ball, exclusive commentary from 4:30. How do you see this one unfolding tactically? Obviously, Tuchel started well, 6 wins and 2 draws from 8. No Cavani, McTominay and Pogba for United tomorrow.
I think tomorrow's a colossal game for both teams. I think Chelsea are obviously in a fabulous run of form. Tuchel really seems to be getting something out of the players that maybe Frank had kind of dropped off a little bit or kind of lost. Chelsea have a fantastic squad full of attacking players. They seem to be buying into the manager. Manchester United are going along reasonably well too, but you know, I can't help but think that the way Man United start games, you know, if they start poorly tomorrow and give Chelsea a foothold in the game early, Chelsea could really crank up that pressure and make it a difficult afternoon for United. But having said that, with the individual quality that Manchester United have, the likes of Bruno Fernandes and Marcus Rashford, they're lethal on the break and can score goals out of nothing, even if they are on the back foot or not playing particularly well. But I just think that when it comes to the big games, if the United don't start well and they fall behind early, Chelsea will be very slow to relinquish that lead. That's kind of how we see it playing out. But if Man United can start reasonably well and frustrate them and kind of hang in there, then obviously, as I said, their quality could get themselves out of it. But I think it's a big test mentally as well for Manchester United because, you know, they went top in January and they kind of fell away, really. So if United want to be taken seriously as, you know, title contenders, they need to start winning big games of football. They need to start winning games that they have to win. You know, games are supposed to win and not against mid-table or bottom-half Premier League teams. I'm talking against, you know, other contenders or title challengers, you know. So I'm looking forward to the game just to see really how it unfolds. There's a lot of subplots there and a lot of interesting things going on in the background. But ultimately, it's going to boil down to can Manchester United win a game of football that I think they have to win.
46 points for Ireland now, 10 for Italy. Keith Earls with the try. Tuchel's hit the ground running. A lot of lamentable articles about Frank Lampard and how he was bringing the youth in at Chelsea and he was doing so well. He needed the time and it's eating bread is soon forgotten, Dan.
Yeah, I think it wasn't equated to Bambi being shot or something. I don't know. I think that was the, you know, Lampard's being taken out was spoken of in those terms. I can understand, as I think I mentioned it at the time, I can understand to some degree how English media want a young English manager to be managing like one of their top clubs when you know, for all of us, you know, England is the home of football in many, you know, in many respects, and the Premier League is where it's at. And they still, you know, in terms of their top coaches, they still have to look overseas a lot, you know, for those sort of premium positions. And yeah, I mean, Tuchel's come in and I'm not sure if anyone ever doubted really that he'd make an immediate impact. It's more maybe the question mark is the classic Chelsea question mark of, well, how long can it last for, you know? And if he is someone who seems to be, you know, quite strong in his views, like quite forthright, like he's the boss, it's his way or it's not. You know, you always think with Chelsea that how many times have we spoken about managers and it sounds great and it started great and then it hits the rocks. But in the short term, I suppose, you know, for me, the interesting aspect of this game is that, like, not long ago, we would have been talking about Manchester United as title challengers at a time when Chelsea were really, like, in that slump that led to Lampard being gone. But and with Man City gone and away and over the hills, like, is this a game that's almost going to provide a reminder, really, in some respects, that actually, you know, it's Chelsea that are best placed to push on. I mean, they spent a lot of money last summer and they brought in some really good players. And you kind of think if they can maximise the potential of what they have, you know, are they better placed to push on and challenge next year? Who knows? Like, and that's probably there's the short-term importance, but there's probably a, you know, jostling for position as well in the longer term. And they've looked pretty good so far, Chelsea, really, haven't they? You know, they've... you know, there's a couple of games where they've been a bit slow and they haven't necessarily, you can see him getting a bit frustrated in terms of executing. And obviously, you know, he can get exasperated, as, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi found out. Like, he can, you know, he's demanding of players. But I think that's probably, by the sounds of it, what they need. And some of the stuff coming out as well is reading about, you know, stuff behind the scenes that he's been, you know, that decision. Again, this is the type of stuff that comes out when you're going well and you had a good result. So you take some of it with a pinch of salt. But the suggestion seems to be he's been very good in terms of even involving the players who haven't been playing, which I think might be one of the criticisms of Lampard, that if you weren't in his plans, you might have been in the cold in some respects, where he seems to have sort of brought a lot of people, and he's rotated players, as we've seen as well, that he's you know, even you know, Kepa got a go. Like, he's sort of involving the squad and what's happening. So they're pushing in the right direction, but I suppose it's a big test for them too in terms of those credentials.
Liverpool against Sheffield United tomorrow. Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip, now Jordan Henderson out. Henderson out until at least April, Damien. Alisson very sadly lost his dad during the week. 2 wins out of 11. It's hard to organise defensively when you're facing these issues.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there say Liverpool making excuses and stuff, but it's been a horrific few months for them, you know, not only to lose their actual centre-backs, but now they've lost their midfield players who were playing centre-back. So you're really into untried, untested kids, and it's very, very difficult. Having said that, I think they should have performed a little bit better than what they did. You know, they lost some games there that even with young, untried, untested centre-backs, you know, their forward players should have picked up the slack and carried them through certain games. You know, and I think they should have maybe got a few more points than what they did. And the wheels really seemed to come off, especially at Leicester, you know, when they got themselves in a good position there. They should have had enough to see it out, you know. Calamitous error from the goalkeeper in a couple of games as well. So, look, I'm not excusing Liverpool. You know, they have been pretty dreadful. They have got problems. Maybe they shouldn't have been as dreadful as what they are. But, you know, just to go back to the Tuchel at Chelsea there, sorry. It's just that, like, you know, all's well and good for Tuchel now at Chelsea because he's new in the door. And when a new manager comes in, all the players, you know, sit upright, pay attention, prim and proper. And when they're not on the team, they behave themselves because it's a new manager. As time wears on, you know, I know what Dan said there is true, that, you know, Frank left you out, you weren't in his plans. At some point, if Hakim Ziyech is going to throw his toys out of his pram, if he doesn't start getting in the starting 11, right now, as I said, all the players are prim and proper. So he hasn't had many issues to deal with. Results are going well. And when results are going well and the manager is picking certain players, if you're not on the team, it's very, very hard to go knocking on a manager's door complaining that you're not playing when the team are going so well. But I think that once he has a couple of off-ish results, I think Hakim Ziyech will be one of the first ones in. And that's when you really have to manage your situation. Right now, everything's nice and rosy in the garden and going along great. So he will have some problems, I've no doubt, further up the road. And how he manages those problems will be key. You know, I have no sympathy for Frank Lampard. You know, you take the Chelsea job, you know what you're doing. I think if you sit down with Abramovich, it's pretty much success or bust. You know that, you know, and you take the job in full knowledge of that. Now, I would have sympathy for him if Frank Lampard sat down with the owners and the board of Chelsea and they said to him, hey, Frank, this is a 3-year plan. We're not putting you under any major pressure. Take your time, build something. And then they sacked him. You know, that's unfair. But I think they probably told him that in his first year because he had the transfer ban. You know, no pressure. You've lost Hazard. We haven't signed players. Just build. Next summer, we're going to have a big summer. But this year, I think he was probably told in uncertain terms, you need to deliver. And he didn't, so he's gone. And I think Thomas Tuchel's in now, and he would have been told the exact same thing. Chelsea are the most successful team in England since Roman Abramovich took over in 2002, I think it is. They, you know, they've won the most trophies. And that's because they have a relentless owner who will not accept not winning. And anybody that gets involved with Chelsea Football Club knows the rules of the game. And if you choose to play it, then you can't be upset when you come out the wrong end of it. So Thomas Tuchel is the next man up now, and I'm looking forward to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, well said, Damien. Just to mention, 48 points for Ireland, 10 for Italy, full-time score from Rome and the Six Nations. We'll have reaction and analysis from James Downey at about 4:35 here on Off the Ball Saturday. Will other teams feel that there's blood in the water when it comes to Liverpool, Sheffield United even tomorrow night, even though they're doomed with the way Liverpool are so decimated with injuries? Like, like it's Kabak, Phillips and Davies. Is there anybody I'm missing who can play in centre of defence at the moment?
I mean, if Liverpool lose to Sheffield United, then I think there are some serious problems, you know, real serious problems, because even with all those injuries, I'm pretty sure that Liverpool's, you know, first choice 11 could be rotated out and some untried, untested young kids could come in, and they should still have enough to beat Sheffield United if all is well. So it's a good confidence booster for them. Hopefully the front three can get back on form, find some link-up play, score some goals so that you know, they get a bit of confidence for the run-in, because make no mistake about it, they're under some serious pressure now for top four. And if Liverpool finish the season out with no trophy and no top four, I think there will be some serious questions asked.
We got Leeds and Aston Villa at 5:30. Some sad news about the Leeds legend Peter Larmour, ill in a hospice, and Leeds have thanked fans across the world for their messages of support. He was a great player, Peter Larmour, for Leeds in the 60s and the 70s. How do you see this one going, Damien?
I don't know, really. They're two evenly matched teams, with two teams that are doing reasonably well. If both teams show up with their A game, then it could be a quite a good game. But if it's one of those games where both teams need to be right at it to win, you know, because they're very similar. And whichever team brings their A game and is 100% at it, we'll go on and win it. So it's going to be a tight one. I'd probably go for a draw in these situations, to be honest with you. But I think it'll be a good game of football. Leeds always is. It's entertaining. You know, sometimes when you check the fixture list on a weekend and you see Leeds on the telly, you do kind of, well, I find myself making room in my day to make sure I watch them, because they're such an enjoyable watch, you know. So I kind of will organise my day around being ready to watch them at 5:30. So I'm looking forward to it. And also, I think Villa are quite a decent side, so promise to be a good game.
We saw during the week, Damien, Aston Villa ban their players from playing that fantasy football game because Jack Grealish was reported to have been taken out of Villa players' teams before it was revealed he'd missed the Leicester match. So it was almost like a leak. Did you take part in fantasy football? Did you play it? Did your teammates play it?
I never played it, to be honest with you. I don't recall any of my teammates playing it. If they did, they didn't talk about it in the changing room. I'm not sure you'd have found many sympathetic ears in the changing room I was in if someone started talking about fantasy football. I mean, we had enough problems with real life football, never mind fantasy football, to be honest with you. So it was not. I had no interest in it. I don't know. Was it big a few years ago, Dan? You probably...
Well, like, see, still big. Listen, I actually stopped playing it a couple of years ago. I used to play it, but it seems like, you know, I've gone against the grain of like the modern Premier League footballer. Whereas, because we had James Richardson on during the week, who presents like a podcast on fantasy football, the official one, and he reckoned that around 50% of the current Premier League players have a team, and it was Patrick Bamford, like, I think, speaks after games about like how he had himself in his own team, which is surely some kind of insider trading or something. I'm not even sure about that. But the broader point is that, yeah, it does seem like a lot of Premier League players are actively playing fantasy football. And I can tell by the look on Damien Delaney's face that he's a bit perplexed as to why they would be doing this.
Because,
like, is it not good, clean fun relative to a lot of the other vices and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Engaged in, you know.
Yeah, that was my point. I mean, I think it was around, 2015, where footballers were not allowed to bet on any football worldwide. Before, it used to be you're just not allowed to bet on competitions you're in. So I wouldn't be able to bet in the Premier League or the FA Cup or whatever. But I could fill my boots with the Championship or La Liga or whatever. But then there was a blanket ban came in. So I think maybe when that came in, maybe that's when the switch came to people getting interested, because I could tell that there was enough fellas that had enough problems betting on football and accumulators and stuff when I was playing football. But that's actual bets. So maybe that is healthy fun, Dan. You're right. Maybe I was a bit giving them short shrift.
Well, the only thing is, though, the part of this debate that it's actually generated is that there are people in places who are playing fantasy football for cash. Now, I don't know if players are, but there's actually people who want this information for their own reasons. It's a bit more serious for them. Yeah. I don't know, like, is it the modern card school or something, you know, for lads to be sort of, you know, sitting on the bus, looking on their own phones, but like talking about their fantasy football teams or something, you know?
I'm glad I'm retired, Dan, and I'm glad I'm back at Chan G, because if I was sitting on a bus at a table and lads were talking about fantasy football, I'd probably want to throw myself out the window, to be honest.
You just know there's going to be some gormless player that's like sitting on the way home after a 5-1 defeat to someone and saying, well, listen, you know, on the plus side, like, you see him, Aguero knocked in a hat-trick today, but I actually met him captain. So, like, this is, I'm absolutely killing it. But it is sort of, I find the whole story quite still of an interesting one, in the sense that clearly, like, you know, teams leak in various ways, right? Like team, like, and you know, everyone wants to know the team. Like in my industry, you want to know the Ireland team before a match or something like that. And it, in this instance, like, it's sort of unusual that it does appear that like players at a club effectively leaked the team, because their teams were visible and they all took like Jack Grealish out of the team. And I think there was a couple of instances in other places where it was like unusual activity, a load of like players from one club taking a high profile player out. And it does strike me as the type of thing that as a manager, you know, or, you know, a coach or whatever, you'd be pretty much clamping down on this pretty straight away and saying, I mean, if you're going to play fantasy football, at least put it in under a fake name or something. You know, like, you don't actually need to have your identity attached to your own team that much. Or do you? You know, is this something that you need to do? Like, I don't know.
I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. I heard myself talking there, and I went, you're the bitter ex-old player, like. But you know,
in my day,
you know. And I suppose there was older players when I was coming into it, when I didn't want to have 12 cans of Stella on the way home on the bus after a game, that they were like, game's gone, you know, kids don't want to be footballers anymore. I do understand that times change and things move on, and if that's what guys are into, I would have no issue with it, if I'm being honest with you. But I suppose most teams know, when they're prepping for a game, they have a fairly good idea of what the teams are going to be and what the tactics are, because a lot of teams don't really change that much. But I can understand that if someone like Jack picks up a hamstring injury or a soft tissue injury on a Friday morning, and the team sheet comes in and he's not there, everyone's like, wow, that's a surprise. So for instances like that, I could imagine the manager being very, very upset, to be honest with you. Yeah, that news broke that he wasn't going to be in the team, because obviously the opposition would have been able to account for that and might change their tactics a little bit, you know?
Yeah, I think the worry is maybe not that players or clubs will take advantage of leaks, but the gambling syndicates and exchanges would, and maybe hedging odds fluctuations to make a profit. And that prospect could increase the number of leaks and the murkier side of something that you wouldn't want to see kind of enter football. You just mentioned it there. You touched upon it there, Damien, and obviously not naming any names or anything. But was gambling a real rife problem in dressing rooms when you played football?
I don't know if it was a problem. You'd probably have to ask the individual players. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, gambling was pretty common. But as I said, I wouldn't go so far as to say that it was a problem. I don't know if those players had problems or not. But yeah, you know, I remember at a time where people were betting on games in the Championship or the Premier League, depending on which league you were in, or even like German football or La Liga and stuff. Yeah, I mean, it was very, very common. Yeah, hugely.
Okay, our other match tomorrow here on News Talk is Spurs against Burnley. Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr calling the shots for that one. Ali and Bale, the prodigal sons, Damien, both scoring during the week. Ali, spectacular goal against Wolfsburger. Is there enough evidence that they can make an impact going forward?
No, I mean, listen, I watched that game, and that Austrian side were no great shakes, to be honest with you. They were as poor a team as I'd see. I actually even like questioned how they made it to the knockout stages. I mean, they really were a kind of a loose outfit. Now, the first leg, fair enough. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on them. They were losing 4-0, so maybe they had zero interest in that game in Tottenham during the week. But Dele Alli looked to enjoy himself. But, you know, that crowd made the pitch so big. There were so many spaces for him that you couldn't but enjoy yourself. So until they start doing it in games that matter, and until Jose Mourinho starts trusting them in games that matter, then I think the jury's most certainly still out on those two.
Can he turn it around, Jose? I know you're a fan, Damien. Can he turn it around?
I don't know, you know. I'm starting to waver in my support, really. You know, I could give him a free pass for what happened at United. Maybe say that it wasn't his fault, that there were some circumstances that were maybe outside of his control or compounded his misery. But he got a clean start at Tottenham, a fresh start, fantastic football club. He spent a little bit of money. He inherited a relatively decent squad. I know people would say it was on the wane and, you know, it needed freshening up, and that's why Poch left. I take that on board, but it was still a pretty good squad. And I think if this doesn't work out for him, I think this might be the end of Jose Mourinho. Next stop, international football or China, possibly. But certainly it's not going great for him at the minute.
We have a prospect of Mick McCarthy getting 23 points out of 27. I'll just come to that in a moment. You're a former centre-half, Damien. I'm looking at Dyer and Sanchez and Spurs defensively. What do you think the problems are defensively for Spurs?
There's not an awful lot of mobility in defensive areas. I thought when Højbjerg came in, it would alleviate an awful lot of the problems. He's a good player and I do like him and I think he is pretty good. But, you know, they got some really good midfield players, really good attackers. And I never thought I'd say it, but Jose just can't seem to organise defensively. No, I am a believer that, you know, you attack and you defend as a team and you can't have one without the other. And if the team is poor defensively, it's not necessarily just the defender's fault. It is a team game. So maybe there are some issues. But for him not to be able to make them more tough, I suppose, mentally as well as actually on the pitch, is a surprise, because that's what Jose built his reputation on. But they do still seem a little bit of a soft touch to me, Tottenham, that when the going gets tough, they find it very, very hard to stay with teams. And they do tend to throw the towel in fairly easily. Now, whether Jose can change that with the players that he has or whether he needs to overhaul that squad, I don't know. But I'd say the Tottenham are fairly lucky that there's not fans in the stadium at the minute, because, I mean, with the level of football that's being played and where they are in the league, I think there would be absolute mutiny at White Hart Lane, to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah, I was just saying there, it's 1-0 to Cardiff away to Middlesbrough, Dan. I was reading an athletic profile of Mick McCarthy today, 993 games of management, and he's doing a great job there so far. You've got to hand it to him.
Oh, yeah, it's an amazing run. I know that 1,000-game target was his sort of goal at one point he spoke about. And, yeah, it's a strange one. Like, you talk about, you know, how would fans in the stadium have responded to his appointment. You know, I'm not sure if it would have been hugely positive at Cardiff. Didn't seem to be one that was a massively popular call, but like he's making it work. I mean, just looking at the league table there, I mean, as they're right into the playoff spots now, you know, and it's a bit open there actually, sort of around, you know, the sort of Reading have hit a bit of a bump. They're winning today, but Bournemouth, Barnsley, you know, Stoke, like there's a definitely a spot up for grabs, maybe two spots up for grabs in that playoff picture realistically. And he had that time in Cyprus and it went badly, but it just goes to show that the more experienced as a manager you are, you are forgiven for a blip like that. You know, a young manager has an experience like Apoel, they probably don't get forgiven at all. But you know, he's straight back into it, hit the ground running, and there's not much more you can say other than like it's a success story thus far. And it sort of feels like he has the momentum with it now, that like he has to, they almost have to push on and get into the playoffs, because it's a free shot, like it's bonus territory for them. And there's 13 games to go. And I don't know, I'm not 100%, I'd be bluffing if I said I'm on top of the strength of the Cardiff squad relative to what's around them. I mean, Neil Harris was there. Maybe there was a view that they were underperforming badly and they were expected to be up there. But still, like the run that he's put together is, it's very impressive stuff.
I'll just go through the scores in the Championship. Full-time earlier, Bournemouth 1, Watford 0, Barnsley 2, Millwall 1 at the moment. Birmingham City 0, QPR 1, Blackburn Rovers 1, Coventry 1, it's Brentford 1, Stoke 1, Luton 2, Sheffield Wednesday 2 is the latest score. As I said, Cardiff 1-0 up away to Middlesbrough. It is Preston 2, Huddersfield Town 0, Rotherham 0, Reading 1 and Swansea 1, Bristol City 1. In the Premier League earlier on, 20 wins in a row now in all competitions for Manchester City, 2-1 victory over West Ham with Diaz and Stones, the defenders scoring the goals. West Brom leading Brighton by 1-0. Brighton hovering a bit over that relegation zone in the Premier League. Leeds and Aston Villa at 5:30 and Newcastle and Wolves at 8:00. Just before we go, Damien and Dan, we had a good debate with Nathan Murphy, Phil Egan and Stephen Doyle on our own stable show, OTBAM, during the week, about the Republic of Ireland starting 11 to face Serbia. It's coming up in the next few weeks. So they all had the same goalkeeper in back four. They all had Kelleher in goal, Coleman, O'Shea, Clark and Stevens. They also all had Doherty, Harahan and Connolly in their teams. Any early thoughts, lads, on who should be guaranteed starters? Interesting that Darren Randolph played today for West Ham. Randolph and Kelleher will be an interesting choice, Damien, on Stephen Kenny's mind when it comes to the goalkeeper.
I tell you, it's not something I've given a whole pile of thought to at the minute. Obviously, kind of there's so much going on at the minute. But yeah, that'll be an interesting call between Kelleher and Darren. You know, I mean, both of them aren't playing particularly regularly or regularly at all. I know he played today, Darren played today, and Quivín played recently as well. But I suppose you might opt for the experience of Darren Randolph. He's been, you know, undisputed Irish number one for some time now. So I'd probably go with the experience of Darren Randolph, really. Maybe get Quivín some games as well. But until Quivín gets some more experience at club level, I'd probably stick with tried and trusted, but look, I'm open to change that as well. That's just a general thought.
And Daniel,
there's a lot to mull over. Yeah, I mean, it's like Randolph playing is interesting because he hadn't even been on the bench recently, and I was actually trying to make some inquiries to see what the story was, because I think he played around January time, and I think there was a feeling like he wasn't looking great at the time. Just then, I was trying to watch in the game today, like it's sort of they were camped a bit, West Ham, and just even to see his kicking and stuff like that, how was he actually shaping up? Because I know that there was a bit of question marks just around that. But listen, the fact he's back fit and he's played, you know, would suggest that he's okay. Whatever the issue was that was keeping him off the bench, clearly he's shaking it off. And I think once he has been playing a bit, I'd imagine that he would play for that game. If he hadn't played at all and Kelleher had played a bit, I thought Kelleher had a real chance. And I mean, the lads, when they made that picture in the week, is when Randolph hadn't played in ages. I think maybe if Randolph has been playing a bit, it probably changes. But beyond that, yeah, I mean, listen, what, there's a month, it's a month off, all right, or less than a month now. And it's sort of getting to the stage where a little niggle and a knock now is actually significant for someone when it wasn't. They've lost John Egan. Kieran Clark's probably got a chance of playing his way in there. I suppose the one question, really, probably a big question, is does change in management at Celtic, does it have any impact on Shane Duffy's forum and well-being and to see where he's at? Because that's still, I think, going to be a decision for Kenny. You know, if as much as it seems strange to talk about dropping Duffy, I understand, and part of me still always thinks that he will play, but I still think, you know, you'd like to see something from him in the next month. I think that's something that's very significant, because otherwise you're looking at Clark, Kevin Long, Dara O'Shea as potential other pairings. So I think that's something Kenny will be watching very closely, and maybe up top as well. I think James Collins has been at the front of the queue, but if Callum Robinson get a bit of form, or Aaron Connolly through the middle is another option as well. He played today. He's playing today. They're probably the areas that he has to figure out things in a detailed way. But there's a lot of fixtures at the moment, so you can debate it now, and it could be irrelevant in a week's time.
Dan and Damien, short and show this Saturday because of the rugby. We've got to leave it there. Take it easy, folks. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys. Damien Delaney and Dan McDonald.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.